Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hi, folks. I'm Lynn, and I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone.
Along She'll be with your my jungle wonderful... girl for today.
That's right, your jungle girl today, with my wonderful jungle co-host, Bobby Meir, Robert, and Dave.
A wee my way, a wee my way, a wee my way,
a wee my way, a wee my way.
Just missing Jack Hanna, be all set.
A wee my way, a wee my way.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle.
The lion sleeps tonight. See, the song's even better than the episode we're going to be reviewing, which is called what, Lynn? See, Lynn's getting to the music. The Jungle is the episode that we're going to be doing for today, and what appropriate music but would be this.
Well, that was absolutely appropriate music, and I loved it. Thank you so much, Robert. Well, you know, this is Mother's Day weekend, and hopefully none of them are spending in the jungle. So I want to wish all of the moms out there a happy Mother's Day and hope you enjoy a beautiful weekend. And anyway, today's episode is called The Jungle, and I'm turning
Why,
it over.
Surprise. Wow. That's a coincidence.
I thought you'd be shocked at that, yes. You have the opening clip, my dear.
Yes, I do, and here we go.
And now, Mr. Serling.
The carcass of a goat, a dead finger, a few bits of broken glass and stone, and Mr. Alan Richards, a modern man of a modern age, hating with all his heart something in which he cannot believe, and preparing, although he doesn't know it, to take the longest walk of his life, right down to the center of the Twilight Zone.
Yes, indeed, and it was a long walk. Alan Richards and his wife, Doris, have recently returned from Africa, where Alan's company is constructing a dam. He discovers that she has secretly kept several items given to her by a local shaman for protection. So when he confronts her about them, she insists they're nothing more to her than souvenirs. So he decides to test her superstitions, and he burns them. Well, of course, that gets her upset. And she begs him to stop construction on the project he's working on, but he ignores her and all of her pleas to stop. But then he opens the door to his apartment to leave for work, and there in the hallway of his apartment building, just outside the door, is the carcass of a dead goat. Oh, my. Alan then goes and attends a board meeting where they discuss
Boy,
the
that
project.
Would turn you off to meet at the scene now, huh?
Yeah, no breakfast for me, right? So Alan then goes and attends a board meeting where they discuss the project of building the dam and the fact that although the natives they'll benefit from it in the long run, they're upset that they're going to be displaced in order to build it and their homes are going to be destroyed and whatnot. And he tells the people at the board meeting, you know, his colleagues, that the local witch doctors have threatened to use black magic against anyone associated with the project.
Their attitude, how are they reacting?
Well, as far as I know...
Well, the Kikuyu are a violent people. They resent the loss of their homes. They resent the enterprise, even though they're going to benefit from it eventually. They resent us, but I doubt they'll cause any serious disturbance, except for Uchawi.
Uchawi?
Witchcraft. Well, you see, a number of the shamans have decided to put a curse on everyone connected with the enterprise, effective upon the decision to go ahead with the project, that is.
And what sort of a curse, Mr. Richards?
The usual. A slow, painful death. Now, wait a minute, gentlemen. I assure you there's nothing the least bit funny about Uchawi.
Oh, you're not serious.
I am. I've seen it work. I have seen healthy men sicken and die within 10 minutes of the time set by the witch doctors who cursed them. Healthy men and women. They weren't touched. They weren't poisoned. They weren't harmed in any way. They just died.
Come, Richard, don't talk rubbish.
Well, wait a minute. Just a second. Mr. Sinclair. What time is it?
Oh, say, what's this you're wearing on your watch chain?
Why, it's a...
It's rabbit's foot, isn't it?
Yes, but I don't...
Why do you wear that, Mr. Sinclair?
Now, see here...
It's for luck, isn't it?
Well, what's that got to do with magic?
Sinclair carries the severed foot of a dead animal around with him in the hopes that'll bring him good fortune, and he can't see what that has to do with magic? Hardy is amused. Although it's a known fact that he's a superstitious man, or have you finally given up astrology, Mr. Hardy? I hear. Here is a 20th century man with a 20th century mind who allows the stars to make his decisions.
And a fine job they've done of it, too, young man.
Mr. Hardy, that's exactly what a Kikuyu witch doctor said to me when I suggested that panther bones could not foretell the future. Now, you needn't smile, Mr. Templeton. I've seen you knock on wood more than once.
Well,
you, Fleming.
Oh,
wait a minute, Chad. Just a second. Mr. Fleming, when was the last time you walked under a ladder, huh? Or crossed your fingers or threw salt over your shoulder?
All right, Mr. Richards, I think you've made your point.
A multi-billion dollar corporation run by witches, warlocks, in a 40-story building that doesn't even have a 13th floor. Now, gentlemen,
Mr. Richards!
You...
And then when the other board members laugh at him, he points out their own superstitions. One of the members carries a rabbit foot, another one practices astrology, and even the building that they're in doesn't have a 13th floor. So later in the evening, he's in a bar having a drink with one of his colleagues before heading home, and he shows him a lion's tooth charm that his wife gave him that's supposed to protect him against a lion attack. And so, of course, they both have a good laugh about that. And then Alan heads home, but he finds out that his car won't start. So he attempts to return to the bar, but the bar's locked, and he forgot to take the lion's tooth with him. So he attempts to use a payphone. Yes, and then he walks away, and the phone begins to ring. Surprise, surprise, he answers it, and he hears nothing but the sound of the jungle, the lions roaring and the birds making all their birdie sounds. And then he begins to head home on foot, and still hearing the sounds of the jungle all around him. Exactly. Including the tribal drums, and he becomes more and more nervous and jumpy. So he tries to take a taxi home, and the driver drops dead while stopped at a traffic light. And then he comes across a bum, and he sees the bum asks him for money, and he says, "Well, I'll give you some money." He says, "But do you hear these sounds?" And the bum doesn't hear the sounds. He says, "No, I don't hear the sounds." So he offers him more money to walk him home. And then when he turns his back, the bum is gone. Surprise, surprise again. So Alan continues on. He's getting more frightened. He finally manages to run across the park and gets to the safety of his apartment. And he pours himself a drink. And then suddenly he hears a lion's roar from the bedroom. He slowly walks to the bedroom door, and when he enters,
step by step,
he finds his wife's body on the bed, along with the lion. Their eyes meet, and the episode ends just as the lion leaps toward him for the kill. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, because back then we don't have violence, and it would have been nice to see him get tore up and
at
least throw some
great
clothes up, showing that, you know, he is being devoured.
Absolutely. Well, you know, well, first of all, I'll begin by saying that Charles Beaumont was a terrific writer most of the time. Charles Beaumont was fabulous. But, you know, it just seems that for every couple of great stories that Beaumont wrote, there was a stinker thrown into the mix. And to me, this was one of those stinkers. I mean, Robert, you summed up the jungle perfectly when you said it was boring and stupid. And and allow me to add silly and asinine. I mean, Alan berates his wife, Doris. You know, he makes her feel like a foolish idiot because she's holding on to these various items of superstition and that she brought back with her from Africa. You know, the tribal witch doctor there put a curse on them. Okay, so naturally she's going to be a little scared. So what's the big deal of holding on, you know, keeping some artifacts? You know, if you want to be superstitious, go ahead. What the hell's the difference? Who's it hurting? I mean, you know, in the long run, it would have done him some good.
I wouldn't want to take this guy to Vegas with me with the luck he had.
Absolutely.
Remember that, what I put in my review about, you know, what you just said about the payphone and the taxi and then the bum and then, you know, the
one thing, it's like,
witch
don't
doctor
stand next
and all of that.
Exactly.
He had bad luck.
It's like, don't poor stand God next to the sky in a lightning storm.
Don't go under water.
If you're enlightened, get away from him. Absolutely. And I don't know. It's just, you know, the woman was worried. I can understand why she was worried. If you want to be superstitious, what's the big deal? But, you know, the thing that got me, the curse was supposed to affect everyone involved in giving the project the go-ahead. So Alan, you know, he told his wife what a silly woman she was for believing in the curse. And, you know, he's warning his coworkers about the curse. So he sounded like a man who was running a little scared. And, you know, why would he be coming down on her so hard when a couple hours later he's trying to convince them they're superstitious? But it was supposed to affect everyone. Now, I didn't see anybody else affected by this. That was one of the things that bothered me about this episode. We never know if any of Alan's colleagues were affected by the curse. And I would have liked to have seen if one of them was. I mean, it was supposed to be everyone involved. But I know that you can only do so much in the 23 minutes. But maybe, you know, the guy that he left the bar with, you know, he could have crashed. When he crashed his car when he got to the corner, and then all of a sudden all the trouble started for Alan. But just to see that he wasn't the only one being cursed. So, you know, one thing after another goes wrong for him, and
yeah, that would have been boring. We much rather see him walk from the bar to his apartment before he gets killed. That
absolutely
is exciting right there.
Absolutely. But what I'm saying is that maybe the guy who left with him, his friend, he could have crashed his car at the corner, and then Alan goes to get in his car and it doesn't start. First of all, it was supposed to be only the people who were involved in the project. The cab driver died. Why did the cab driver have to die? But what, because he was driving him? I guess death by association, I suppose, because Doris didn't have anything to do with the project. Yeah, death by association. Doris had nothing to do with the project. That's his wife, but she was married to him. So, again, death by association. To me, it might have actually been creepier if Alan went home to his apartment, and when he opened his bedroom door, Doris turned into a lion right before his eyes and attacked him. Or maybe if she were sitting with the lion on the bed and petting him with a crazy look on her face, and then the lion jumped up and attacked him. I don't know. I think
and
that
then the jungle crazy music going off.
There you go. The jungle
music. There you
go. Exactly. But I thought, you know, that would have been a better ending. But, I mean, John Denner was good. John Denner was very good. But I liked him a lot better in The Lonely from season one, you know, where he played the guy who came down and in the rocket ship and helped the guy who was criminal on the asteroid. I think you guys know what I mean. But
I just think his roles keep going down the Twilight Zone, because the next one, I think, is the one in season five about Mr. Guy in the Grave or something like
that.
Yeah,
and he plays the guy who claims to be able to bring people back from the dead. Yeah. Yeah, he was much better in The Lonely. But, you know, I thought the tribal music and the jungle sounds were pretty decent effects. And the last scene in which the lion looks at Alan and then leaps to attack, that was well done. Like I said, I would rather have seen it a little creepier than that, but I thought it was pretty good. You know, the look on Alan's face when he sees that lion in his bed and his dead wife laying there, it was a perfect look, but that's about the only really good things I can say about this episode. It's definitely not one of Charles Beaumont's best works. So I'm going to guess that the moral of the story is it pays to be superstitious, and I don't know if that's such a good moral. So my rating for this one is a 1 for poor. And now I'll turn this over to Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I feel pretty much the same way about this story. A lot of things could have been done a lot better than what we were presented with this. And, you know, the point that the scene where he's in the boardroom and they're going over the proposals and stuff like that. And then, you know, he pointing out everybody's superstition, saying, you know, we all have superstition. it would have been nice to see something happen to them as well. But as you said, I think time limitation. I think they could have done something like that. Maybe, you know, take a 30 seconds. Maybe one of the guys were having a drink somewhere and, I don't know, a panther comes out and kills him. And then, you know, just kind of like, we could have inserted them during this long, tedious, boring walk that he takes from
something.
The bar to his
yeah.
apartment. Yeah.
Anything,
I mean, during that
anything,
time, they could have
yeah.
stick that in there. Yeah. Put the jungle
I
music
think
on.
They should have. I think they should have shown one of the other colleagues getting killed. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you could have put that, inserted those in that long, unnecessary walk that he does. And, you know, the scene where we see the witch doctor, it would have been great. And in my review, I kind of put how I felt the story should have ended. The tribal warrior comes to life, spears him in his arm or chest. And then you have him staggering back to his apartment, you know, almost crawling his way back, where he collapsed by the bedroom. And then at that point, you see the lion. He comes and attacks him. And he's already dead, but, you know, the lion takes care of the rest of it. But
just add a little more excitement to it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's the whole thing. And like I said, it's just that walk through the park. And another thing, why couldn't the park change to a jungle in Africa? You know, all of a sudden he's in the park, then all of a sudden he's in the jungles of Africa again.
I didn't think of that. That would have been cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that would also, you know, been better than, you know, what we were presented with this here. He says, we follow him and his wife, her superstitions. He goes to the bar, blah, blah, blah. You know, he goes through all of these unlucky situations, blah, blah, walking through the park, blah, blah, blah. Opens the door, has a drink, and killed by a lion. The end.
Yeah, it's a little drawn out.
Yeah, that's why I use those two words for this story. And one of the things I brought up too, and I sent you and Bobby a copy, was a movie that I kind of liked. I remember it when I was a kid, and I just got done rewatching it yesterday, called Call of the Cobra. And, I mean, it has a good cast in it. It has Richard Long, David Janssen, Jack Kelly. I mean, you have Richard Long, who goes on to the Big Bally series and plays Jared Barkley, which, by coincidence, remember in the movie, he was a lawyer. Well, in the series, the Big Bally, he was a lawyer in that. So.
Right.
Yep. And then you got David Janssen, who goes on to do The Fugitive, Harry O, the movie Birds of Prey, I think was another movie.
I thought it was pretty good. I didn't think it was bad at all. I thought it was a pretty good movie. I mean, I didn't fall asleep during it, and that tells you, if I don't fall asleep during a movie, it means it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad movie. It just needed to be tightened up a little bit more. I mean, it's a Universal movie. Universal is known for the werewolves and Frankenstein, all the monsters.
Yeah.
And in this one, you have a woman changing into a cobra.
Yeah,
but, you know, let's ask Bobby, too. What did you think of the movie, Bobby? I just wanted you guys to watch this to get a comparison to this episode.
Well, this episode makes the movie look like an all-time classic, but that's not much of a recommendation. I don't like movies like that, so it really wouldn't matter who was in it. Normally I probably would have fallen asleep, but I managed to stay awake during it. I wouldn't recommend it, though, unless you like movies like this. A lot of people do. I don't, personally.
Yeah, I would recommend it, because I didn't think it was that bad. I thought it was really well done, and, you know, I mean, you're not talking about, like, a classic, an Oscar-winning performances or anything, but I just
thought it was
you know, I thought it was a pretty well done movie. I thought it was good. I liked.
I mean, it's a 1955 movie, and most of these actors were just up and coming anyway. They hadn't really.
Right. Yeah, David
Jack Kelly goes on
really
in Maverick, and yeah.
Exactly, and the special effects were what they were for 1955, and but I mean, I wasn't bored. I mean, it kept my interest in the whole thing, so I didn't mind it at all.
Actually, David Janssen made a worse movie than this. And that was Dandy, based on the old comic strip. Anybody remembers that?
Really? I remember the comic strip, Dandy.
He made a movie out of it. He was in it, yeah.
You're kidding me.
That's even worse than this, believe it or not.
Oh, my God, I never knew that. Wow. Well, I didn't think
You know, the guy that did the, curse on the people when they hit that temple is the guy that plays the chief and Get Smart later on down the road.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, that's him. The guy that played.
Who's also in 100 Yards Over the Rim.
Yeah, like I said, the guy from Get Smart,
He's also in 100 Yards Over the Rim. He plays the doctor in that, the Cliff Robertson one. Oh, I
forget
his
name.
So
you got a couple of actors that were in Twilight Zone that was in this movie as well.
Yeah, Richard Long and him. Oh, gosh, I didn't even notice that was him. I forget his name off the bat, but yeah, I'll have to look for that again. I didn't think it was bad.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay, for cheesy type movie situation. I mean, you got, these guys in the military are getting ready to come home and spend one last night in town, before they go home and get the offer of going to a temple to see people that can actually change their form from human to animal. Or in this case, a cobra. Let me go ahead and I'll throw the trailer on here.
Stop him! The Cobra Goddess will avenge yourself! One by one, you will die!
From halfway around the world she had come to make friends with five unsuspecting young men. And when she walked in the night, death followed, swift and violent. Starring Faith Demerg, Richard Long, Marshall Thompson, Kathleen Hughes. In the eerie and fright-filled story of a Cobra Woman whose mission was to kill, to whom love, when it came, was strange and terrifying.
You have to forget about me.
You're being silly.
There are things I have to do.
Things
I have no control over.
That was the police. Carl is dead.
Oh, no. Paul, what about you and Tom?
Here we are.
Unfortunately, Richard Long in this movie was the info dump for the whole movie.
Yeah.
I have to explain why I believe in this. She's dangerous. I can't put my finger on it, but
Every animal she walked by was like the dog was scared to death of her, the horse was scared to death of her, the cat almost had a heart attack, and he knew.
Well,
he knew something was up.
It's almost a witch situation, like when a witch walks by and a horse gets scared.
Maybe
the power that emanates from the witch is the same with the people that can transform.
Sure.
I don't know. Yeah.
Felix is here. Hi, Felix. Felix in New Jersey is here. We got Ed here. We have Felix here. And we got Ron here. Okay, we've got a nice group today.
But also an episode called One Step Beyond that preceded was before Twilight Zone came out with what's the guy that narrated One Step Beyond?
John Newland. John Newland.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
He kind of does the Serling thing at the beginning, talks of do the intro or whatever, but there was an episode on there where this criminal was he's sentenced to death and they can't kill him. So, since they can't kill him, it's double jeopardy, so they release him. But there, as he's walking down the road past the library, there's these two statues of lions, and one of the lions comes to life and attacks him. And then, Newland says at the end that, justice, the British sign for justice, the lion, whatever he says at the end. I just couldn't remember what the episode was. But that one kind of reminded me of this one. But as I did with you, Lynn, I give it a 1 for poor as well. So.
Yeah.
Pass it over to Bobby.
Oh, do I have to? Well, in my review at the group, I said I had nothing to say about it, and that hasn't changed.
You let us
say it. Nothing.
You let us say it. You let us say it for you.
I have nothing to say about it because there's nothing to say about a story where a man simply walks around a movie set and does absolutely nothing. So you got to give me something if you want me to talk about it. I will say this. I wish I had that dismembered finger so I could hold it up in front of the TV screen to show them what I think about this episode, because that's about my opinion of it. It's absolute crap from beginning to end. It simply is nothing. And the worst part about it is that this nightmare is not over yet, as I pointed out several weeks ago. We're in that incredibly ungodly 3-episode arc that almost sank the series, in which it's hard to believe that a series like this could do 3 stories in a row this bad, and we've got one more to go yet. Maybe the worst one of them all. And there's nothing happening here. The story is nothing. Anything Robert suggested would have been better. Anything Lynn suggested would have been better. Anything would have been better than just having this idiot walk around in the last half of the story doing nothing. Never mind the fact that he's out in the streets and he doesn't wonder why there's absolutely nobody around but him. That would have been enough to cause me to start running.
Well, wait a minute, Bobby. Didn't he light a cigarette? That was something. It would have been nice if lighter didn't light. It would have been nice if lighter went light.
And as Lynn, the best part of the episode, as Lynn pointed out to me this morning when we watched it together, is when he got out on the street and got in his car from the passenger side instead of the driver's side. That didn't make any sense either. But nothing about this story makes any sense. And the special effects are non-existent. I don't consider a lion sitting on a bed to be much of a special effect. So there's just nothing going on. It's as simple as that. I thought actually that the highlight of the episode for people who watched it on DVD is the mental health public service announcement at the end of the episode. Because believe me, if you sit through this thing enough times, you'll need to call the Mental Health Bureau to try to get some help. It's just awful. I mean, 2 weeks ago we did the Still Valley, and that was slow. I thought that was slow. That was absolutely fabulous compared to this. And now you got this, and now 2 weeks from today we got that silent movie one. I mean, it's just, I can't imagine what I was thinking when I was 14 years old and watching this, whether I thought that the series was over or what. To me, this is the worst spell of the Twilight Zone other than the end of the series, where the series just completely dies and they do nothing that's any good. Well, we got a long way to go before we get there. So, you know, what can you do? I don't mind doing a bad episode every now and then. By the way, who wrote this? I thought it was Matheson. Was it Beaumont?
It's Charles Beaumont, yeah.
Oh. Well, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Either one of them should be ashamed for writing them. And, what is there to say about it? There's nothing. I don't know how either one of you can give it a 1. I can't give it a 1. 1 for what? What does it get a 1 for? For doing what?
Well, I might have one reason why you hate it, Bobby, was some of the music was from King Nine Will Not Return.
Well, there's nothing like borrowing from yourself. So, I mean, that's nothing new in this series. They recycle a lot of stuff. Oh, yeah, King Nine Will Not Return. That was another one of my great favorites. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, all I know is a story like this, or the one we did a couple weeks ago, you just stay away from it. You just, when the marathon is on, I just turn off the TV. I wouldn't even sit through it. It's actually not worth it. And
I like the lion at the end. I thought the lion was rather handsome guy, you know.
Well,
handsome lion.
That doesn't save a story, so.
No, but it's worth a 1. I have to give a 1 to the lion.
Anyway, I wish I had something startling to say about it, but like I said, you gotta have somebody doing something in the story, and I don't consider a man just wandering around.
They should have had a flashback of them being in Africa. Might have helped.
Yeah.
And how the curse got started.
Well, because they might have turned it into an hour episode, God forbid. So I wouldn't want to add anything to it. Best to end the agony when you can. So all I can say is I give it a 0, obviously. And I can't wait till 2 weeks from now so I can do it all over again. It's a lot of fun. It's great. That's all I got to say. It's bad. Terrible. Horrible. Junk. Worthless.
Okay. Dave, how do you feel?
Well, I didn't actually get a chance to re-watch this, but I do remember watching it from some time ago, and I didn't particularly have any great thoughts about it from that. The thing that, a couple of points that I'll just sort of around about the story rather than actually talk about the story, which Bobby would say there wasn't one anyway, but a couple of things. one was, it reminded me, well, not reminded me, but there was that little thing with having the lion in, remind me of that one where there was the episode called A World of His Own, where you had the writer who could dictate anything on his dictaphone, it would come to life, and then in his hallway was an elephant. I'm wondering whether Sterling thought, oh, we got good ratings for that one because it had elephants in it. We'll try having a lion in this one. I should, by the way, say this was this episode we're talking about, The Jungle, Series 3, Episode 77, first aired on the 1st of December 1961. It wasn't special effects, I suppose, really, if that lion really was sitting on the bed. I think a really nice touch, and I think... Now, who would appreciate this most? Robert probably appreciates this more. If it had been Clarence the cross-eyed lion on the bed. Anybody remembers that?
It did it when it hit the wall. He said the door.
Oh, God, yeah.
Here goes the lion. Getting ready to attack. All of a sudden, boom, hit the wall.
Wasn't he in that TV show, Doctari?
No, but... That reminds me, when you were talking about other films, the film that, again, Robert, that I thought about was Jumanji.
Robert Williams.
Yeah, the idea about it, where he becomes like a jungle man, doesn't he, and through the game. They have to play the game to get... Because somebody starts playing the game, they have to play it all the way through to the end.
There's a game called Jumanji that has a life all its own.
You have no idea what you are getting yourself into.
An ancient game where the primitive spirit of the jungle can leap out and take hold of your world.
I've seen things you can't even imagine. Things you can't even see.
And those who have ever played the game know the dangers that lie within.
You're afraid. It's okay to be afraid.
I am not afraid of anything.
Prove it.
A jungle in there.
One other thing is the these are just little small things because I haven't really got a lot to say, and that is the Emily McLaughlin, is it, who played the woman, the wife, played Doris Richards. Thing I just noticed about it is, apart from that, she was on General Hospital, briefly married to Jeffrey Hunter, of course.
Emily McLaughlin. Emily McLaughlin, yeah. I think her name was, yeah.
Right, yeah. Briefly married to Jeffrey Hunter, which to me is interesting because, of course, he was originally going to play the captain in Star Trek.
He was Christopher Pike.
Pike, and they brought him back when they did... Well, he was in the menagerie, and... I think that's how they used the episode up. So that was a little bit of interest for me. And to show how hard I'm searching around to try and give Bobby something, looking on the Twilight, the Jungle,
sorry about me.
The Twilight Zone description on Wiki, there's a description here, and it's talking about as he begins to head home, but his car won't start. He attempts to return to the bar, but he's locked out, and he's forgotten his lion tooth inside. He attempts to use a payphone, The word payphone is highlighted as though anybody under 30 won't know what a payphone is. Because with cell phones,
like Batman, where you know this is the back computer, or this is the back water fountain, or something.
Yeah, I mean, what would Superman do now? I mean, from what I understand, so many kids have phones. If they saw a phone on a street corner, I don't suppose they'd know what it was.
Well, remember in the Superman movie, they did do that. They changed it where Clark Kent's trying to get ready to change in Superman, but he goes to a phone booth and it's, remember that
and then,
scene? Yeah, and he picks up the phone, hangs it up.
You can't close the door, right? There's no door. There's no door to close. I remember that exactly. I mean, there are maybe a handful of those phones still left in the country. I mean, I did pass one a couple of years ago. I was driving somewhere in New Jersey, and I actually passed one of those pay phones with the glass doors all around it. They're still around, just a handful.
Yeah,
they're
I mean,
there.
I know, obviously. Yeah, I know, obviously, at railway stations and things like that, they will have a public phone. But actually, on street corners, just because a person who's out and about, who obviously won't have a personal phone, they were, we know such things, might need to make a phone call. And so the point is that on the wiki, they deemed it necessarily to have a reference to what a payphone was. So anybody under 30 knows what it is. And that shows how much I'm scraping around. I didn't think it was too bad when I watched it, but I've got a feeling that if I had have managed to catch it this time and recently, I would have been disappointed somewhat. It sounds like it's a well, I was going to say one trick pony, but I suppose it's a one lion pony, isn't it? It was probably a weak idea, maybe poorly executed, and because I can't really give a definitive rating, I'll just say probably 2 out of 5, simply because that's how I remember it. When I watched it about 8 to 10 years ago.
Okay, cool. And our newest member, our newest person is here, Ed. Hi, Ed.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey. All right. So glad to see you back again. Thanks for joining us again.
No problem. Wouldn't miss it. I had fun last time.
You sound like a disc jockey.
I sound like a disc jockey? Do I really? Oh,
you sound
I'm
like
not
a disc. You have a disc jockey voice.
Oh, well, I
you have a great voice. You have a good voice.
Well, I've done DJing for years. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
You call yourself Dr. Johnny Fever and say, I got the fever.
I got the fever. All right. Anyway.
You too. You have a great,
I guess
have a
that
great,
comes
great,
through.
Great radio voice. So what did you think of the episode?
Well, I thought it was boring. But you know
you
I can tell. You know I can
hey,
tell
join
what,
the crowd.
What I can tell you guys had the same idea. You know, I can tell when I'm bored during an episode. I find myself wandering off mentally, watching things in the background and watching for props that just don't work. And this one here, how I knew that I really wasn't enjoying this episode was when I found myself during one of the scenes, he leans on a mailbox and the mailbox moves. And it tips ever so slightly by about an inch. And I'm thinking, well, even back in, you know, the 1960s, mailboxes were bolted to the ground.
Yes, they were,
I shouldn't be moving, you know. And I'm thinking, wow, I just noticed that. That's not a good sign. This is really boring, you know.
And that's when the crickets set in.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
That's
so
great.
It wasn't a particularly great episode. No, it just was missing something. Like a lot of them are that, you know, you think this could have been really, really great if they just done something different, you know? Like for instance, you know, the fact that we're watching him wander around alone through the whole town, and you know, that's a common theme throughout the Twilight Zone where you have one guy alone and it's supposed to add tension. And it's supposed to, you know, the fact that he has no human contact and he has, you know, nobody to talk to. He tries to pay the bum to come with him, which, by the way, that was also unintentionally funny because, you know, one minute he's there and the next minute he's gone. And I guess the idea was that he's supposed to either never been there. He was in his imagination that he actually saw this guy, or that the guy took off. And all I'm thinking is this is a bum who's probably half in the bag, or if not, he's got some questionable mental faculties, and he thinks
or
this
could have
guy
been
is
talking to somebody from Cleveland.
You know, this guy, you know, one minute he's there, and the next minute he's not only gone, he's gone. You know, I'm thinking this guy was so weirded out by him that he took off, you know, cartoon style around the corner to the nearest alley because he was so weirded out by him. And so, yeah, I ended up giggling at that scene more than anything. It wasn't to me, it didn't add anything. And then there was the odd the window behind him as he's talking to the bum, where you've got the Zulu character, whatever it was, behind him with the spear.
Right, with the spear, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, with the spear. And, you know, they were trying to make, you know, add ramp up the tension somehow by making an actual human in the window and giving him a little scare as he looks up into the window. But it didn't really add anything, having that actual person there. Because, you know, you had the same thing you had in Still Valley where if you look closely, you could see him.
You see him move.
Yeah. Moving just ever so slightly, you know.
You can see them all move, I know.
Yeah. It kind of takes you out of your suspension of disbelief for a second, but this whole episode did. But anyway, it wasn't as bad as Still Valley, but it was pretty bad. I liked the cab driver also. The cab driver who he tries to get the ride from. And if I was in there in that particular situation, I think I probably would have ripped the guy out, got in the front seat, and driven away. Instead, we got a cab driver who's. Yeah, you know.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, just take the cab. It's already going, you know. Instead, we got the cab driver. The cab driver may not even been dead. He might have been narcoleptic for all we know, you know. And he's just he's
a socialite. Socialites don't drive; they're driven. They're in the back of the seat, not the front.
But
you know that, Ed.
That's really a good point, though, Robert. I mean, he could have taken the cab. Oh my God, that is wild.
We're not supposed to think about this stuff, though. Not supposed to think about it. Just enjoy the episode. Oh, wait, we can't. It's not enjoyable. Never mind.
But bad episodes make you think more than good episodes. That's the problem.
They do. It's true. It's very true. Maybe not think the way we're supposed to, but they certainly do make you think about something.
Bobby, did you even think about him taking the cab? He could have taken the cab.
No, I can't think when I'm watching something like that. My brain simply completely turns off. I can't think of anything except how to get out of it and how to turn it off.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
Like watching a disaster happen in front of you and you kind of move your foot to the right or left and then move along.
Or some people
say... I just get offended because I think that a series like this should aspire to something better, that's all. I mean, you can't be good all the time, but... I'm very tough on that, as everybody knows. I hold things to high standards. If you really, you know, 50 years later, people are still talking about this series, then there shouldn't be stories like this in it. Maybe occasionally, but not three in a row. Come on, give me a break.
I'm surprised, Bobby, you didn't go and check the IMDb and see what.
Oh, I do know what it is. Oh, it gets a 6.9 rating. I said it in my review that. One person there called it one of the best episodes of the entire series.
Yeah.
Oh, gee.
Oh, my goodness.
Well,
some people thought it was creepy, you know, that kind of thing.
Maybe he only saw one episode.
If I'd only seen one, I wouldn't say that.
Or they saw this and maybe the next one. Once upon a time, that was funny.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I just don't know why anybody like Serling, assuming that he had final authority on the scripts, would look at a script like this and think there was anything in it. I mean, it seems to me that even in writing, it looks like there's nothing going on, but maybe it was a low point. They were just desperate. I don't know.
I think
probably the C scripts, and the C scripts are like C scripts or whatever. Yeah.
But I also think he had such a deep respect and deep regard for his writers, like Matheson and Beaumont and all, that I think he had a hard time turning down anything that they submitted. I think that he would look at it and say, well, it's worth a chance. You know, let's do it. Or maybe on paper. Maybe it looks better on paper than what actually comes out on the screen. But, you know, he very much respected his writers, so he usually gave them kind of carte blanche when it came to stories. That's what I've always heard, anyway. But anyway, so this is great. So we got a good variation of opinions today, even though everyone sort of agreed. We had some good. And Ed, I love the thing. I wish I'd thought about him taking that cab. that would have been great.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, Ed, did you give your rating?
No, I didn't. Let's see. I'm
1 to 5 scale.
1 to 5
scale. 0 to 5.
Well, you,
know,
you can do a 0. It don't matter. You know, Bobby loves doing zeros. So
it's let's see. Only because it made me laugh unintentionally. I'm going to give it a 1. I'm not going to give it a 0. I'm going to give it a 1. That's
about what I gave it. That's what Robert gave it. Yeah. Yeah, and Bobby gave it a 0, and Dave gave it a 2. So we're kind of, you know, with some very.
Well, I only gave it a 2 because I hadn't had a recent watch of it. No
right.
doubt my rating would have gone down if I had.
Probably.
And Ron gave it a 1, a big 1.
Ron gives it a big 1. What, Felix, what do you give it?
1.
A 1. Okay, Felix gives it a 1. Okay, so we're kind of like pretty much across the board on ones. All right, cool.
Is Ron giving it a 1 or the big finger? I'm not quite sure there. Looking at the text.
Well, you can't give a 0. You got to have a finger, so I guess it's got to be a 1.
Well, you know what, guys? I know you can't wait to hear this, but 2 weeks from now, we are going to be discussing the greatest Twilight episode ever. Yeah, right. Now,
okay, let me get it ready for you, Lynn.
Now, I'm in Twilight.
Okay, go ahead.
It's called Once Upon a Time. Once Upon a Time with Buster Keaton. Oh,
my. That's a gem in itself.
Lions, tigers, and bears, oh, my. Yeah.
And time travel hats. That looks like it could have been made out of a model box or
helmet.
Something.
Yeah, a football helmet. Football man probably made it. Yeah, football helmet. Yeah, pretty bad. But anyway, it's still going to be fun to talk about it because we can cut it up and we can wreak havoc with it. And that's
I can tie in the artist with that next time. So
cool.
Well, we haven't seen that yet, so we don't know.
Oh yeah, we haven't seen. Oh shoot, we should have gotten that.
It's not.
It won Academy Award. Didn't the actor win or? Didn't the pitcher and actor win or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And the dog. I love the dog. I want to see the dog. I'm just so nuts for animals. I really want to see the dog. Yeah, so Bobby, we should try to catch that.
It's not out yet. It's not on DVD yet.
Is it on Netflix yet?
No, it's not out yet. It's not on DVD.
She's
still making money off of it.
Yeah, it's probably running the second run theater.
Yeah, we're in the in-between time between theaters and video. You're going to find it in a few second runs, probably, yeah.
Yeah, bummer. Well, all right. Well, anyway, I'm still looking forward to doing it because, you know, it's always fun to just, like, bash it and wreak havoc with it and cut it up and, you know, have a lot of fun like we did today. Ed, I'm so glad that you did come back. You know, sometimes we get people in for say they're... Yeah, sometimes they say they're going to come back and then we don't see them again. And I'm so glad you came back.
No problem. I'd be happy to be here every time. This is fun.
Every two weeks? Yeah, I love it. Yeah, that'd be great. Every 2 weeks. And next one is the 26th, same time. Ed, where are you from again?
Connecticut,
okay. All right.
Yep.
So that means that what time? It's Eastern time there, right?
No, it's Eastern time. Yeah, it's 6:46.
Yeah, 6:46 there. All right, so it's the same time, 6 o'clock every 2 weeks. So we'd love to have you again.
Well, it's just because it's kind of confusing. You're just because stuck in Seattle there, Lynn.
Connecticut. Do you ever go to Foxwoods Casino?
I've been there a few times. Yeah, there's plenty of casinos around.
Yeah, I've been there once. Mm-hmm,
yeah. Yeah, I live halfway between Boston and New York, so.
Oh yeah.
Pretty quick to get to anywhere interesting is within an hour and a half drive. So.
I love Boston. I've been to Boston and I love it. Really great. Terrible parking, and terrible. It's terrible trying to find any parking places in Boston, but I do love the place. Can't park anywhere. You have to have permits everywhere you park. It's terrible.
Oh yeah. Yeah, parking and driving in anywhere in New York and Boston is a pain in the neck, but it's worth the trip.
Oh, yeah, and I spent a lot of time in New York. Well, I've only been in Seattle for less than 2 years.
Oh,
on the East Coast, Philadelphia.
All right.
And what is up with your pitching for Philly there, Lynn?
Don't
get in trouble there?
Shoot. Oh, well, yeah. Okay, yes, he did. He was a bad boy. That's gorgeous. Cole Hamels. The women call him gorgeous. Gorgeous made a mistake. He did a bad thing. It wasn't even a mistake. It was intentional. And he did a bad thing, and he's sorry for it. He's being punished. But, you know, I'm disappointed in him. But
the Phillies have bigger problems than that. They're in last place.
No, they're not.
Oh, yes, they are. I'm afraid so. They're having a terrible season so far.
Well, they'll pick up. They're not. I'm not worried about them.
Mm-hmm.
I think my Reds are in the second place or third. They're doing a little bit better this year.
I'm not the least bit worried about my Phillies. My Phillies always come back. They always come around. They're probably doing badly because I'm not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. All right, enough of this. Stop it, you guys. All right, so 2 weeks from now, on the 26th, I want to see everybody. I want to see Felix and Ron and Dave and Robert and Ed and Bobby and I, of course, will be here. I want to see everybody here. And Rick wasn't here today. We'll have to yell at him. I hope Rick shows up soon. And we will be back to do Once Upon a Time. So have a happy Mother's Day weekend, everybody. I don't hear anybody say
that. Well, it was Father's Day. It'll be different. You wish yourself a happy Mother's Day.
There's no mothers here. There's no mothers in this. Okay. All right. So no mothers.
Happy Mother's Day, Lynn. Who wished you?
Oh, happy Mother's Day to you guys. All right. Well, all right. Thank you. I have two cats back home, so you can wish me a happy Mother's Day.
There you go.
All right, folks. See you in 2 weeks. Bye now. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Before we play the outro, let's have a little music. Welcome to the Jungle. Oh.